Welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is he's kind of a trickster spirit. Sometimes people see him, sometimes people don't, but he's around. He's narrating everything. He knows everybody. It's Joel Amides.
Is that the name of Samuel L. Jackson's character? Is that what's going on here? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, he's Joel Amides.
I see.
Oh, I just got that.
You think people couldn't see him? Because I just figured he was like, you know,
In the opening scene, he's at the concert, right. But then he disappears. And then other times, like, people kind of see him, but he's like, you know, he's the MC. He's hosting
everything. I see.
So, Joel Amides, what's going on?
I don't know. This is the second musical we've covered here on the podcast, and I liked it better than Chicago, but it's interesting. Chicago, Chirac, weird.
Oh, yeah.
Did you make that connection already? No, I mean that Chicago and Chirac, but the fact that we watched Chicago for the podcast.
Oh, no, I didn't even realize.
Yeah, that's weird. I think we're in Twilight Zone country now.
Oh, no, I hope it's not the reboot.
It is. The 80s reboot, not the recent one.
Oh, okay, that one's
Forest Whitaker.
Oh, the 2000s?
Oh, that's... Okay, 2000s, not even the 80s. Man, it's been a lot of reboots. This
one had George R.R. Martin wrote on it, and, like... Anyway, so, yeah, we watched Chirac, which is, I guess it's part musical. It's an adaptation of Lysistrata by Air Stephanies. And it's Lysistrata... If you haven't read it or seen it, we covered it in my literature class in college, and it's all the women in Greece kind of start a sex strike, and it's I think it's like a mainly women from it's Sparta, Athens, and I forgot the other main ones, but And they withhold sex and to stop the Peloponnesian War. And Spike updated it for Chicago and America for instead of Peloponnesian War, it's about gun violence and political inequality and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it feels like he's, trying to, recapture what made, Do the Right Thing. Because it kind of feels like a reboot of Do the Right Thing in certain ways. Do you see where I'm coming from?
I do get that. I mean, it has a bunch of throwbacks to all his way earlier work, you know? I mean, ends with a wake up at the end, which school days is the last thing said.
Yeah. And my favorite callback is of Spike movie you haven't seen, Bamboozled, the liquor, the bomb that you see all over, that's from that movie.
It's like it's one tight end universe, like the View Askew to Your Universe or whatever that was, you know, where Jay and Silent Bob is everywhere.
Yeah, it's kind of one because Spike kind of did that because Isaiah Whitlock Jr., I think in four movies, plays the same character. This one is the one where he doesn't, but like from 25th Hour. She Hate Me, Red Hook Summer. I think there's another one. He plays like
he's like just a detective. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, or something like he gets promoted at some point, but he plays.
He's
the
a
same
detective in this guy. One, isn't he?
Or, no, he's like a
I
club owner.
I can't remember.
But he gets his.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, this is the longest one.
Oh yeah,
he was going for the world. You know what? There should have been a stinger scene at the end of the movie where he finally goes it.
Yeah,
because I don't think we get to see it conclude. So
I for preparation I looked into the Lysistrata play over again, and Jackson's character Dolomites. I don't remember him being a character, and I think it's supposed to be like a play on Dolomite. Because at one point he even says signified monkey, which was one of Dolomite's signature bits.
Uh-huh.
Because the whole time they're just talking like Dolomite, basically, yeah. In Rudy Raymore. And it's...
Makes sense.
Sometimes really fun and delightful, and other times like this is kind of exhausting.
You know, I didn't notice most of the time, honestly. Like, sometimes it was... A little bit like annoying, but most of the time it just came off as dialogue. Honestly, it could have been a lot worse, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really depended on who was delivering the dialogue, too. Because like Nick Cannon, kind of like okay, well, I'll explain. I've kind of never liked Nick Cannon.
What?
Like even as a
How
kid,
could you?
He had a show on Nickelodeon when I was in elementary school that I thought was unfunny and garbage. But like, I was like the one person in my grade who hated it, and so I kind of was like, always felt a little like left out slash like there's something about him as a performer has always irritated me that I can't really. Place, and he is on all that towards the end, and so like this isn't like a recent thing. This goes back like over a decade of me not liking Nick Cannon, and him in this is decent. Like, but there's something about him that just kind of irks me, and I don't know what it is. But like his delivery of the dialogue at first feels clunky. A bit, but he kind of grows into it and gets better with it. John Cusack, like, he does it except for that one scene, which really stands out, which, like, why... I don't know, like, some of it was like, why did you stop doing it for this scene? Because, like, there are times where, like, you just stop with, like, the poetic dialogue.
Well, I mean, it's better than trying to fit everything into, this stylized dialogue if he couldn't make it work, honestly.
Yeah. But it's kind of like a damned if you do, a damned if you don't, because, like, it's
weird. The whole thing's a fantasy. The whole thing's a weird fantasy where Wesley Snipes is kind of a loser. And you know that's never happened before.
Nah, but he's really good.
Hmm?
He's really good in this.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Yeah, Wesley's, I guess this, like, it was his, kind of one of his big returns.
I mean, this is, like, the first real movie he did after...
Prison.
Prison, yeah. Yeah, I think everybody did a lot of good stuff in this. I think that I think that Nick Cannon is probably the weakest in the movie.
Yeah, except his when he's performing on stage, like because he actually does have like he's a pretty good rapper. Because I feel like he wrote his own stuff.
No, he does have credits in the soundtrack, so.
Yeah, the opening song is by him. you know, the YouTube lyrics video in the beginning. Now, since you're like, I don't know, like, since you're not too into music, like, did you like the soundtrack? Did you like the opening on a concert where it's like kind of setting you up of like it's you know, it's a musical sort of.
Yeah, it's fine. I wasn't like that's the thing. Sometimes music will just pass by me and I won't even notice. So like I wasn't distracted by it or anything like that. I'm not going to run out and get the album like you were going to.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. So like after I'm glad we didn't record the yesterday, because like I liked having at least a day or so to sit on it, and I don't think I like this. I think it's coming from a Spike Lee fan who has seen multiple movies. He's relying a little too much on his older movies for you to like for you to get into it. I feel like some of it is his him being emotionally manipulative at his worst.
What? Emotionally like manipulative?
Yeah.
Like the... you know, that's another thing. I guess Nick Cannon wasn't the only one. Like, I didn't really... Jennifer Hudson, I didn't really get what, you know...
Sure. I understand why she's in the movie, her part, but it just feels so one note and like,
yeah, it feels
on
empty.
One hand, on one hand, it's like, yeah, like there are hundreds, thousands of women like that in living in America right now, but at the same time, she isn't given much to do besides be sad. Her daughter's dead.
Yep.
And it's just kind of shitty, and it's like, doesn't it make you sad? It's like, yeah, of course it makes me sad, but like it's just so it's a really cheap move.
Yeah,
and Jennifer Hudson, so it's like there will be like some built in, you know, like hey, I like her, like she's a very likable, you know, performer.
I mean, I think it's supposed to speak to a very specific audience. I mean, the things that spoke to me were like. Whenever the white people were talking. No, I'm just kidding. I was actually going to say the whole John Cusack speech, though. You know, where he's just laying out these facts and these comparison things. And I was like, he's really kind of bringing it. Like, he kind of stands out like a John Cusack. Like, oh, okay, he's doing fine.
Yeah. It seemed kind of weird to me that there's like a Catholic church is... Like, what is the center of this black community?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a Catholic... I went to Catholic school and all that. But, like, I was... At the time, my family was, like, one of the few black families. So, like, seeing black Catholics in anything is, like, this is strange to me. It's just something, like... You know, like, you don't see... I don't know. It. Yeah, that's it.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I couldn't identify what orthodoxy or anything like that.
He specifies he took a
vow of celibacy, right? Right, but that's not necessarily Catholic, because I think there are other. I think there are other ones that do that.
I was under the impression that all like Protestants and
all Protestants are fucking. Is that?
yeah, they're allowed to fuck without condoms.
Yep.
I mean, with condoms.
Only without condoms, yeah.
No, that's Catholics. They use the rhythm method.
You're going to wonder, why are there so many Catholics if, you know, the rest of them are all, the Protestants are all, you know, just going at it. I don't know.
Yeah, but, besides the emotional manipulation and Jennifer Hudson kind of being wasted, one of the women, the Trojans, one of the Trojans, is Hecuba, I think they call her. or her cube, it's spelled Hakuba, but I think you say Hakuba, is played by Lala Anthony, who is Carmelo Anthony's wife, and she's on, I think she's on like Love and Basketball, but she does a bunch of reality show shit. But like, it was distracting seeing Lala Anthony in this.
See, I did not stand out to me. Nobody stood out to me except for John Cusack as like an odd person out.
As like the one prominent white guy.
I mean, David Patrick Kelly does an amazing job also.
Yeah.
Being an absolute scumbag. And, yeah. See, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm on the opposite side here.
Okay. What did you like about it?
I like the performance way the, you know, I don't know. I just like the way it felt like a one big song, like everything laid out story-wise, and I liked that even though it's an incredibly serious subject, there, you know, he's still inserting that Spike Lee humor and things like that. I mean, you know, it's got problems, yeah, obviously, as every Spike Lee movie does when it comes to women's sexuality and such. But
yeah,
no lesbians. I was waiting.
There's one.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because like, she's leaving town, and someone says, like, why are you leaving? Like, in that poet dialogue, and she says she's a, I won't say it, but she says a D word. For...
Let me rephrase that. No naked lesbians making out with each other.
Yeah, yeah, there's none of that, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah, plenty of Nick Cannon's ass, though.
Yeah, he worked out for this, clearly.
he just came off the line like that.
Yeah, he was fresh off of America's Got Talent.
Or but, you know, I liked Angela Bassett. I liked who's the main, is Tiona Paris?
Yes.
Tiona Paris. I thought she did real good. I thought rest in peace, Dave Chappelle.
Rest in peace. Good.
Yeah, you know he's dead to us.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's not physically dead.
Yeah, that scene was genuinely hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And
get up there and dance.
It's a little homophobic, but it wasn't like. It is more that character was homophobic, so
yeah.
Okay, was right. Tiana Paris was in Dear White People. She was the one who wanted a reality show, who was dark skinned and didn't want to be dark skinned. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Nope, never seen it.
Oh, I found it hard to relate to. At first, because that was not my college experience, and I found it strange the way that college was set up, because it's like a rich kid Ivy League school. But besides that, it deals with some interesting stuff.
Well, it says she's going to be in the Candyman remake. That's all we need to know.
Yeah. I believe all the movies are set in Chicago.
Yeah, Cabrini Green. That's the only place I'd ever heard that before, was from Candyman. It gets brought up a couple of times here. Like, I guess it doesn't exist anymore because of, whatchamacallit?
Gentrification?
Thank you. Yes, that's the word. That thing that I actively participate in by living where I live.
Oh. I don't know if that happens where I live, but like it's, I don't know, I didn't grow up in like in a city, so I'm not like there aren't like neighborhoods or boroughs or anything. So, right. Like, that whole system is still a strange...
Sure.
Still a strange thing to me.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
Yeah, it's all my fault. All right, so, do you think it's worth going through the plot, or do you want to talk about, like, overall themes and stuff?
I mean, you basically explained what happens. The only difference is that this is about... The movie is greatly about gun violence, and, you know, they drop black-on-black crime, which is now, like, something that assholes use as a thing that is, like, an example of why white people are superior for some fucking reason. Like... And that's obviously not the context that we're talking about here, but it's all, you know, they talk about how it's all set up that way, like it's all basically pushed that way by people with money who don't give a crap, and NRA, you know, take shots at the NRA, and
I read a bunch of, like, positive reviews and of it on Letterboxd.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a lot of it is kind of saying it's, like, it's an important movie that should be seen. But like, they weren't saying it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's kind of my problem. It kind of does feel like it's trying too hard to be important at times.
I mean, he always puts me, like, I don't understand, yeah, that. Like,
but like, Do Right Thing,
what he does.
Yes, but like, this is this. There's something about it to me. It felt inauthentic and kind of phony.
Mm.
I'm not sure what it was exactly about, but something felt like phony about it.
I don't know what to tell you. It's 90% fantasy, 10% reality. And that 10% reality is horrifying.
You mean the Jennifer Hudson subplot?
No, I'm talking about how there are skinny-ass white boys who like to get naked and ride cannons as if the cannons are their dicks.
Oh, yeah. Like how the penis envy tank.
Yep. No, not the Jennifer Hudson crying part. The actual crimes that go on. Okay. The death toll that's uncontrolled. Like, you know, they're talking about how we're sending troops to police over, you know, these other nations, and we can't even control our own cities in any reasonable way.
Yeah.
I mean, that ending is so sad. The way, you know, they skip straight to it, like when the peace treaties are being signed and they like literally roll out the things that we need. It's like education and psychological centers and a job guaranteed for everyone past the age of 18 and all this other stuff. It's like, this is not, it's never going to happen. And it fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's,
Yeah, anyway, it was a good movie. You're right.
Like, the ending, like, besides the peace treaty aspect, like, did the Nick Cannon turn himself in, did that feel phony to you?
Yeah, but I think that was because of his acting, not necessarily because it didn't work in the story. They, you know, for some reason, is the machismo bullshit thing that his character is all about just finally breaks at the end. It does seem weird. And I don't break him, or I don't buy him, you know, just suddenly breaking down and being like, it was me all along.
You could argue that the John Cusack scene with him, where John Cusack says, like, well, I knew your dad. I watched over performed his funeral. I don't know what the right word is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that whole thing. I guess you could argue, like, that because that happened, he started to break down. But, like, even then, it's just, like, no. Like I didn't get the sense after that conversation between those two, like, it was, that, like, he was starting to change. It felt like he was still super focused on that macho bullshit.
Like, yeah.
It seemed to, it just was so random, and like this Nick Cannon playing like a tough guy from the hood just does not read as real at all.
I mean, I didn't recognize him. I didn't know who he was, and I know who Nick Cannon is, which is funny. Mm-hmm. But I did not recognize him as the guy from Drumline, for God's sake. So, and obviously I don't listen to music in general, so I'm not familiar with his music. So it just seemed like he was just a okay actor. And the scene with him where he is talking to John Cusack, I think is mm-hmm. a moment of good acting between the two of them, because mm-hmm. it feels like he's keeping up this stupid front. And, like, you can tell that he knows, not that he knows something is wrong that he's doing, but, like, that he doesn't, like, his character just doesn't give a crap. And he's not ever going to give a crap, because he thinks this is the life, this is the way it's supposed to be, and nobody can tell me otherwise. And Spencer, mm-hmm. he is Chirac. Did you think about that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. I was sure.
Yeah, I mean, Spike's, like, sledgehammer approach to message to these movies, just, like, it just doesn't work for me in this.
Yeah. That's okay, but I still think it's a movie that people should see, because I think that not enough people think about the messages. It's like Black Klansman. Like, I don't think it's necessarily this amazing piece of work, or, you know, art or anything like that. Black Klansman happens to be a very watchable, almost kind of popcorn movie, but, you know, those messages, like, hey, I hope you were paying attention.
Yeah. I don't know, like I don't know, like the way it opened. But also, it's trying to be like an art. This is trying to be an artsy movie too.
Sure.
Cause it feels like a bit of a departure. A little bit.
I mean, departure from usual. What?
Well, first off, it's Chicago, not New York.
Yes.
So I'm not from Chicago, but I have seen some critiques of people being like, well, he's not from Chicago, so this is, he doesn't get some of it right, and like the whole chart and certain, and the mayor of Chicago, what's his name? I can't remember his name.
D.B. Sweeney.
No, the real one. I hated the title because of the association of Chirac, and apparently people from Chicago hate when people refer to it as Chirac, which is the kind of the point of the movie.
Exactly. What people from Chicago? That's my question. Are we talking about the people who live, that go to Ebertfest and shit? Because those people probably don't mm-hmm. know why it's called Chirac. They probably don't experience what's going on.
Yeah, like, I can, like, I kind of understand from, like, the perspective of, like, the mayor. I think he's still... No, he lost the last election. Anyway,
it's because he didn't, like, know it was called Chirac.
In Wilmington, Delaware, it had one of the highest rates of murder per capita in the nation recently. It's Delaware's only real city, and it's kind of like basically Philly Jr.
Mm.
Jada Pinkett Smith, who will come up again in Bamboozled, she was going to produce a show called Murder Town about Wilmington and a crime in Wilmington.
Mm.
And the mayor turned her away and said, nope, you are not going to make a show called Murder Town about Wilmington, Delaware. And nice. That was kind of hot news for a bit, which, yep. As someone who lives in the state, like, I'd rather not that be the case, personally. Even though Wilmington is a real shithole with a real problem, but I don't think, like an ABC, like, weekly cop show would be the thing to really help that issue.
I mean, Dexter cut down the murders in Miami, Florida like crazy, so.
Did it?
I don't know.
Did the books help?
Based on that show, I think it's the murder capital of the world, but apparently I'm wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently it's been Chirac all along.
Yeah, I knew Chicago was not great, but I didn't know it was that awful.
Once again, certain parts, right?
Yeah, certain parts. Like, I've been to Chicago, and I stayed in Ukrainian Village, which, if you're listening and you know where it is, and you know what neighborhood it is, you know, comment or whatever, so I can know, because I have no fucking clue, because we kind of stayed in, like, the touristy parts of Chicago. But it was a lot of fun, but, like, over the weekend, it was, there's like a, took a lift, and the driver was like, oh yeah, 8 people were shot this, yesterday.
Oh, have a nice like, day.
Yeah, so like it still is a kind of a shithole. Like,
I mean, that's what I want my driver to tell me when that, so I know when to leave.
Yeah, and they're like, we were just having a nice drive, and like, even though it's a holiday weekend, that doesn't mean people aren't getting shot and murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It's still Chicago.
Damn straight.
Did you like Wesley? And like, do you think there was enough Wesley Snipes, or do you think there should have been more Wesley Snipes?
I think there was just the right amount, especially for the type of character he was playing. You know, he was, even though he's the boss of whatever that is, whatever they're, the orange gang. Oh, no, wait, they're the purple gang.
Because purple is Nick Cannon. They're Spartans.
Oh, okay.
In the rap, he talks about picking up a pack of Magnums, not Trojans.
Oh shit! Because
they have bigger dicks. Because they get Magnums. You get it?
Neat. That's all I give you. Neat. Anyway. Yeah, I think that. He's a lot of fun in the character that he's, you know, the amount of time he gets to do on there. He's not playing this, like I said, he's not playing the tough guy. He's playing kind of a silly fool almost, and I dig it.
Yeah, he even has like a really annoying laugh that I loved it every time he laughed.
Yeah.
Personally, like it, like this Wesley being goofy,
yeah,
is a goddamn delight. And like even and like he's played Cyclops, tying into like the whole Greek origin of the story. Mm. Like he wears this like bedazzled basically eye patch with like diamonds on it, and it's like it's so gaudy and ridiculous. And it's like, yeah, of course this idiot would have like a eye patch with diamonds on it.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And let's see. But like tying the whole like Spike or kind of relying too much on his older movies, there is Angela Bassett. It's basically playing the mother sister part from The Right Thing.
It's definitely I thought you were going to say she was playing Malcolm X's wife. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Also, but like, first. No, but like Mother Sister and Do Right Thing is Ruby Dee. And she kind of has, it's fulfilling that Ruby Dee, like, matriarch role.
Mm.
Of like the community leader who's an older black woman. but it's Angela Bassett, so she looks the same as she did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because she's aged like fine wine, just looks exactly the same, and she's like in her 60s now. And the whole thing of like the house burning down in a major city, and like the people who live in the house staring at it goes back to like Malcolm X, because that happened towards the end when the Nation of Islam burned down his house. There's the I don't know if I mentioned if we were recording, but the bomb, 40-ounce malt liquor from Bamboozled. Other one of David Patrick Kelly, because he shows up in Sparkling Spike stuff.
Hey, they also reference the Warriors, which is weird.
Oh yeah. That. I thought it was intentional.
Because they say something, come out and play, right? Who are they? Trojans or Spartans? Oh, bitches always come out and play.
Yeah, it's a legion of upset men.
And then David Patrick Kelly. Yeah, those fucking guys. We're going to go get our women back. See, that was good. Yeah. Those scenes were good, too, because it's like, shut up, jackasses.
Yeah,
they were
funny. I love that. One of them was Thomas Jefferson Byrd, or Thomas Byrd Jefferson, what's his name? The Spike Lee guy who, you know what I'm talking about?
No, but hold on a second. Thomas Jefferson Byrd.
Yeah. He shows up in mainly Spike stuff.
He was in The Sweet Blood of Jesus. That's the only other thing I've seen him in.
He was a pimp, and he got game.
Clockers, Bamboozled, Red Hook Summer, Get on the Bus, Girl 6. I don't see She Got Game.
He got game. He plays a pimp.
I don't see He Got Game either, but, you know, this is Letterboxd, so.
Yeah, it's a small role. He's in, like, maybe 3 scenes, but he's pretty good in that.
Yeah, he's also in Kudzu Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the dad on the series She's Gonna Have It. Nola's dad. If you remember.
No, I don't. No.
Oh, can you not?
That's weird. Is that like second season or is that first season?
First season.
Oh, that's weird.
Plays her dad.
Yeah, I don't remember at all.
Oh. Yeah, he's great. He's like a theater actor, and he's been nominated for at least one Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't really acted since The Sweet Blood of Jesus in a movie. I'm sure he's still doing theater stuff in New York.
Yeah, they rent him out on a rail.
Yeah, I hope Spike puts him in stuff again, movie-wise. But, yeah, so there's a whole... what else was it? Roger Smith is in it as the trench salesman.
Oh yeah.
So like, there's all these like little callbacks and
you're saying that like it's a weird thing.
Well, like more just like it just feels like, in particular with Angela Bassett, it's kind of like her whole thing is feels like too much of a. Like trying to repeat Do the Right Thing with Ruby Dee. I don't know, like this, I found it distracting at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Well, what'd you think of the dance numbers?
Do you consider the rap show in the beginning a dance number?
Yes.
I like them.
Yeah, honestly, I'm drawing a blank now. The only one I really remember is when they try pumping in the quote-unquote sexy music.
What's another one? I think there's another one in the mix there, but it's I don't know, but like the way people spoke with like the rhyming, and that kind of does fit into like the musical nature of everything. But like I like the dance number of like the National Guard guys outside in their boxers, which
yeah, see,
yeah, you
know, like, I mean, it was making me laugh, you know. But like, I mean, there was in my opinion, there was a bit too much sexualization gyrating during that particular part. But it was, I mean, it wasn't. I don't know. Was it excessive? That's, I guess it's not really my place to say. It just felt a little weird.
Yeah, because I don't know. Going just like this feels like Spike also trying to prove he can write women better. A little bit.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, it's, because Lissa Strada in it, she, yeah, sorry. Because she is a three-dimensional character who gets, like, a arc and all that, but, like, some of it just feels like him. Like, I don't know, it's the way he, like, sexualized some of the, like, the female characters was, like, I couldn't tell if this is him being like, a straight man, and this is, like, his version of a sexy woman, or if it's, like, felt organic, because it kind of, I was never quite sure, like, where to land on that.
I mean, it almost certainly is, his version of it as a straight man. Let's see. He wrote it with Kevin Wellmont, so. Yeah. Not gonna get a lady involved.
Yeah, and the original play is written by a man.
Yep. So, even then.
Yeah, there's one movie Spike wrote with a woman. Crooklyn wrote with his sister and his brother.
And you said that's the worst one?
No. I like Crooklyn a lot.
I know. I'm just kidding.
The worst one is...
It's got Delroy Lindo in it. It can't be bad. That's why I say about even things like The Core.
Okay, I was right. Kevin Wilmot co-wrote Black Klansman with him.
Yep.
Just, I don't know, just the way the women were, it just kind of feels like I couldn't tell if it was him. Like with Chicago, like the way all the women were sexualized, it felt empowering at the same time. And with this, some of it just kind of veered into like, is this your idea of like making an empowered woman, but also she's sexy at the same time?
Wait, say that again?
Like, is this Spike's version of trying to make a still, of trying to, like, have empowered female characters, but at the same time, they're sexual, like, they're sexy? And so, I don't know.
I mean, that's what he's usually trying to do, at least with movies where the ladies have a bigger part. I mean, like, that's all over The Sweet Blood of Jesus. You know, and it's kind of a fail spectacularly in that particular one. This one has a bit more going for it because, I mean, I think he has a lot of fun making fun of, like, the way men are, especially when it comes to women. Sometimes it's like, what are you going to do? And sometimes it's like this one where it's like, you guys are real stupid. Or, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he's clearly, you know, having fun with like the men's group who are angry at the women, you know, giving up sex. And like you see the one soldier who misses booty so much, he's booty crazy.
Yeah. He's gone booty crazy.
I think it's like he got booty on the brain.
Yeah, booty.
And he's just like muttering, booty, booty. I want a big booty.
Yeah.
Small booty.
Oh yeah, the guy. Now I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's funny.
And there's like the one guy, Oedipus.
Just go beat off, dude. What's wrong with you? Yeah, Oedipus, who's always talking about his mother. Yeah.
I thought, like, was that actually his mom, or was he talking, or was that like this like pet name for his woman?
They basically acknowledged he was talking about his own mother. It was like, my mama.
Yeah, and every time he says my mommy, everyone reacts horribly.
Like, what? Oh, man, you're gross.
Yeah. I don't know. But you like David Patrick Kelly as General King Kong?
Yeah. It was funny.
Yeah, you liked him in those little, Confederate flag.
Yeah, that's what I, you know. Oh, man, he says that thing about President Obama. Yeah, he's, you know, he's a class act.
Yeah, I'd rather have an African lion than a lion African. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
I guarantee that people must have been saying that. Luckily, I didn't know any of those assholes. Man, they don't have any of the good quotes on IMDb. What's the point?
It's full of great quotes.
I'm going to add my own quote. Booty, booty, booty. That's a big-ass brass bed for banging black booty.
That's what D.B. Sweeney says.
Yeah.
And Harry Lanks Jr. gives him a real great what-the-fuck look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, he's like, a guy who said things and then went, high five, and got no response.
Did you like the stuff with the mayor in his office? Because to me, it all felt kind of extraneous.
I mean,
like when a mayor is like, even the first lady has pledged an oath, and he's down on my ass about it. It's like, ugh, come on. Like, it just felt like I didn't need to know about like the mayor and his shit.
I mean, it is extraneous, but, you know, they do need to have, like, a top person who can make decisions, which I guess he's the be-all, end-all at the end of the movie. I convinced the American government to fix everything. Yay!
I don't know, like, I like this more than... I like this Suplex Jesus more than this.
I do, but it feels... I mean, they feel like different movies.
Yeah, they're vastly different. This is a return to Spike, because this is like right after that, and this is Spike coming back to, like a huge ensemble thing, and you know, a shit ton of characters, and like you have the classic a group of people watching an event in a Spike movie, and everyone reacting in unison. You have the classic, in particular, a group of women together talking about something like race slash gender related.
Because
in particular, like when Alyssa Estrada and Indigo are trying to meet for the first time, it reminded me of in Jungle Fever when all the women are discussing. Discussing men, and like they get into colorism, and I think that's when the wife is like, "Oh yeah, my husband's with a white woman now." Yeah, I know. Is this? What did you think of? Spike switching to Chicago instead of New York. Did you think it was different, or did you think it felt kind of the same?
The man has, I shouldn't say it that way. Like he feels like he has such a narrow view of New York in the times that we've seen, you know, mm-hmm. him doing that. So it didn't feel, it didn't feel different necessarily, except for the fact that, you know, there weren't any big buildings, I guess. But that's about it. Like it's felt like a smaller place somehow. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I've been to neither New York nor Chicago.
No, you should go to Chicago. It's cheaper.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to get shot now.
Go to the Bean.
I heard the Bean is racist.
If it's racist, then I don't give a shit. I love that Bean. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds stupid until you go to it in person. It's like, oh, this is actually amazing.
All right. Everybody knows you love the Bean.
Yeah, the Bean is the best.
Beanie boy.
Yeah. What would you think of, like, the, I don't know, the whole politics, like the whole, like, did you think the scope of this was too big?
No, I wouldn't say it was too big. I mean, how can you capture that in a movie anyways? He did the best with what he had. And like I said, it's a fantasy movie. It's not real what's going on there. Not a real interpretation, not a real example of what it would actually be like, you know?
Yeah, it feels like a play. I was like a live action play.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean. It feels very theatrical.
Feels like a Greek tale or something. Oh wait,
no. But did it feel overstuffed or compared to other Spike movies? Or?
No, I mean I don't think so personally. What do you think?
I don't know. It feels like it may be a bit too much. A bit off with too much that I could chew at times, but then, I don't know. It's uneven, but kind of every movie we've covered is by him is uneven.
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah. You know, I feel like it is. It does keep up, basically in a bottle of the story that's going on here. But you know, it touches on like maybe this thing's going throughout the world and stuff like that. But like I said, that's what makes it so sad at the end. It's just a total fantasy. It's not real that like. We're going to unite over this issue because look at us now.
And look at the, like when they show Brazil and like the, how it affects the world. I was like, oh, that can happen now. They'd all be shot or arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they have a real shithole president. And like Japan is like, yeah, Japan is probably not going to change. They have some real fucked up issues when it comes to gender. And, like, the South Korean one made me think of how, I think it was a year and a half ago, maybe, there was a huge march in Seoul because, do you know what I'm talking about?
Nope.
Women were tired of spy cam porn where they're being, like, watched, where they're being recorded in, like, dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And, like, listening to, like, secret upskirt videos and stuff like that. And there's a huge march, and it's like the biggest march, or one of the biggest marches in South Korean history.
Yeah. I understand that. Maybe they need to do this after all. I mean, we should talk about the fact that somebody famous who was on Twitter tried to call for one of these things to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It was Alyssa Milano, I believe, right?
Yeah, was that after he was elected?
Yes. Yeah.
And also, the movie borrows from the Liberian Civil War, the second one, I think. No, it can't be a psycho. Anyway, a Liberian Civil War where this woman, I did not write down who she was, has sex strike and that help stop the Civil War.
Mm.
Lema Guabwe?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that part? Where, no. Like, when Lestrada first stays with,
Angela Bassett.
And Angela Bassett, and Angela Bassett, and she notices, like, she doesn't have a TV, and she's, like, quotes Malcolm X, saying, like, the best way to hide knowledge from a Negro is put in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, have you ever heard of, Lema, Guopi? Not Guopi, It's Gbowee. I'm still not sure how you do the GB sound.
Mm.
And, like, it cuts to her going to the library and watching and looking up, Lema. I say it differently each time, but it's, I'm not sure.
That's where she gets the idea, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
And also, yeah, and Lisa Milano, you know, argued for that via Twitter, but I don't think that really did much.
The thing that she called for on Twitter?
Yeah,
it got
traction.
It got shut down right away. Like, everyone was basically like, no.
Yeah. It definitely could work, because, like, it worked in Liberia, which has a really complicated political situation in history. So, did you like the, let's see, did you buy the chemistry between Lysistrata and Demetrius?
I mean, I don't know. it's, yeah, that's, it doesn't really, yeah, I don't even know. Because we see him with another woman later, with Candy, yeah. Right?
Yeah. We know her name's Candy because she has a tattoo on her shoulder.
Yeah.
That says Candy.
Right. Plus, we hang out all the time. I recognized her. No.
I mean, she's a hoe because they mention, the woman mentioned, well, won't the men find hoes? And that, well, we'll recruit them.
Yeah.
I guess
they missed this one.
Yeah.
But Nick Cannon's really good at sex, so.
Yeah. Because, like, he has a tragic backstory that, to me, felt kind of contrived.
Yeah, that was fucking weird.
Yeah, which, oh, that's another throwback to an older Spike movie with Jungle Fever, when the kid, the child of Snipes and his wife in the movie, I forgot who it was, the kid walks in on them having sex.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like he's, little Demetrius is just watching.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's how Rorschach started out, so. All makes sense.
Wait, this is a secret Watchmen movie?
Yep. They're all secret Watchmen movies. Did I just blow your mind?
A little bit, but does that mean there should have been a sex scene to Hallelujah?
I mean, we got kind of a sex scene to something. I don't remember what was playing. I honestly thought, like, because I didn't know how the story ends or anything like that. I was like, knowing Spike Lee, we might just get a sex scene at the end of this. It's like, luckily, Cyclops shows up to stop it before it gets too far.
Yeah, I thought they both climaxed.
I mean, that's what it sounded like. Yeah, but I don't know.
And that's when we finally get the dolly shot, the dolly headshot thing, with both of them getting ready to fuck. And it's, I guess, like pay per view because everyone gets to watch.
Yep, I got lights. I got special bed.
Yeah. I was going to say the whole military thing reminds me of another movie, but I won't say what the movie is because we're going to cover it, and I don't think you've seen it. Seen this one movie, so... It'll be a future episode where I think this movie referencing... covering a movie that I'm pretty sure Spike is referencing.
I see.
They is also referenced...
Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance? No, just
kidding. No. It's a movie that it was also he referenced in Black Klansman.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
I won't give too much away, but I think next year, early next year, we're going to get to it. So that, Love, Sex, Music, Chicago, I don't know, like,
Well, you don't have to run it into the ground, I mean, it's...
No, I mean, it's... I admire it, it's very ambitious, and over the top, and, like, very Spike, in those Spike ways. But at the same time, it's like, it just... Something about it just doesn't feel right.
I see.
Like, it just... I don't know, like, I love Bamboozled. I think the movie is unfairly overlooked, and I think it's just like it's kind of the best and worst of his excesses, but in a way that works. Where like this is kind of like for me a best and worst of his excesses, but it doesn't quite work. Like I will probably watch this again at some point because it's very watchable and breezy, and it feels. Like I was surprised it's 2 hours, because usually a movie like this, when he does it, it's, as we've seen, it's 2.5 hours. And so, like, I wonder if like Kevin Wilmot kind of helped rein in Spike a little bit with like, you don't have to do every idea, you can do most ideas, but not every idea.
Yes, well, okay, see, the way you're talking about it, I would just want to be like, we saw Summer of Sam. We saw He Got Game. We saw She Hate Me. Those are movies that I feel like he was trying to pack in. You know, I guess He Got Game is less of one of those, but he's trying to pack in so much stuff that it gets lost. It feels meandering. It doesn't feel like there's necessarily any focus for any large amount of time. I don't feel like Chirac fits into that category. I feel like it is a contained story that is kind of silly. And I mean, he does have his serious stuff in it, but like it's a silly concept. And there's a lot of joking around in it. There's a lot of humor in it. And it seems like he was having fun. Like, I get a sense of fun from what was going on in it. Certain scenes, obviously, were an exception. And I feel like the scenes are the exception are the ones that don't work. And I don't think it's because he was trying to pack too much into it. It's just maybe he didn't have enough time to really work it out or anything like that. I don't know. Is Jennifer Hudson a good actress? Because the couple of things I've seen her in, I haven't been blown away. I never saw...
Dreamgirls?
Yeah, I never saw Dreamgirls.
Oh, no, she's great in that. So is Eddie Murphy. But I think the difference with Chirac is... It's based off of something else, a play from thousands of years ago, and it's also co-written by someone else.
Yeah.
And Summer of Sam, I guess, was co-written with the guy from The Sopranos. That's like his friend. What's the guy's name? You know I'm talking? Michael Imperioli?
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
They co-wrote that together, so...
Also says Victor... I don't know how to pronounce this guy's Italian last name. So there's multiple writers on there.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, like... he and Kevin Wilmot seem to have something good going, because then they did, Black Klansman, which they share an Oscar on that.
Right, and but I mean, there's a certain level of like I said, shiny popcornness to Black Klansman that I think Chirac also shares.
Oh yeah, I definitely see a connection between the two.
Yeah,
it's more grounded, but it's also, you know, it's very watchable.
Right, and they both have like complete fantasy endings. Now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Like, racism was solved, and that guy got arrested, and the other people blew up. Yay! Not to spoil that movie. Apologies.
Yeah, but the arrest at the end of that movie is kind of the one part I really fucking hate.
I mean, that is so 100% of fantasy, though. Like, I can't hate it.
Yeah, but the same thing, it's like, this does not feel organic to the rest of the movie at all.
No, it doesn't.
This is so tacked on. And not in, like, a fun tacked on. It's like, you can just cut this. There's no need for it.
But I feel like that's a... we'll get into it when we get deeper into it. I feel like what that is like, you thought racism was solved, and then you get the actual end part where, you know, the cross burning and then the footage.
Yeah. And you get the close-up of the beard, and it's like, who is that?
It's like,
I wonder who it is.
A commentary on you, on, like, the people who were like, oh, it's a happy ending. Like, of course it is.
Yeah. I think this should be seen. It's definitely a well-made movie. Spike is no slouch. He knows how to make a good movie. You said you hate it, though.
I don't know.
No, I'm kind of more inside of I'm just not... I don't know. I don't think I like it. But I definitely will probably watch it again because it's very easy to sit through.
Yep.
I'd rather watch this again than Black Klansman again.
Yeah, I feel about equal to both of them, really. I would sooner show someone Black Klansman over this movie because I feel like it's a little bit harder of a pill to swallow because of the way the dialogue rhymes and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like, the ambition is high. I don't think it necessarily hits, but I definitely admire it. No one else can make this movie besides Spike Lee.
Yep.
And it's streaming a bunch of places. It's co-produced by Amazon. So
it's streaming. So if you have Prime, it's ready to go, yeah. In 4K.
Yeah, it looks great. And, I don't hate it. It's just, like, there's certain, like, I, you know, it's, like, one of the things I like the most is Dolomites. Because it's a riff on Dolomite.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's just like this fun little host.
Samuel L. Jackson kills it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he was into it. Unlike, I mean, you see him in the Marvel movies. You're like, this guy's getting a paycheck. Yeah. And you don't blame him. Of course he is.
Yeah, and here he's having a great time. Gets to wear some crazy suits.
Yep.
You know, they get less crazy as the movie goes on. He gets more like conservative with the color choice, which I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean exactly.
He's got the Jerry curl and he's eating at the chicken restaurant. No, wait, that was School Days. Sorry.
I'm going to say Pulp Fiction because he has little Jerry curls in that.
And he's got some sort of wig on.
No, that's straight Jerry curls. Pulp Fiction, the movie, not the El Bell EP. There's some people out there who know that.
Not the series of books that are Pulp Fiction novels.
Their genre?
Yes. Books? Yes, the genre.
Series of books?
Yeah, it's a series. Starring Detective Pulp.
Yeah. Oh, I'll keep this in. So a while ago, I mentioned Il Bill on an episode. I mentioned that he's the older brother of Necro. And Joel, there's a movie you like where the rapper Necro has a small part. Good Time. The Robert Pattinson movie.
Yes, I'm aware of the movie Good Time.
Anyway, the rapper. I thought you liked that.
No. I thought you were joking.
I thought before you. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Everyone else likes it. Yeah. Okay. And I think it's an incredibly well-made movie, but hell no. I'm never watching it again.
Are you not going to see Uncut Gems?
No, I'll see Uncut Gems. Like I said, that they got promised. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's just not for me.
Yeah, next episode will be either D-Pan, the can winner, or, this is 2015, I should say, or it'll be Spotlight. D-Pan, as of now, is still, streaming in places.
Alright.
And, yeah, and, okay, it's, about a Sri Lankan Tamil family who, I think, live in Paris. They escape, Sri Lanka to go to live in France.
Mm.
But France is not what they expected it to be. That or
Spotlight. And a bunch of people come in and try to shoot them in their house? What's going on here?
It's allegedly inspired by Straw Dogs, so yeah, we'll see about that.
All right.
And, yeah, so, D-Pan or Spotlight, and hopefully Justin Harrison. Oh, and, wait, when's this coming out?
Tomorrow.
I don't know. This is November?
This is October.
No. We did the... Yeah, this comes out in November. So the special episode is... Fred Williamson special with the Grindbend guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this comes out like a month from this recording or so.
Alright.
Yeah, so if you have stuff to plug or whatever...
Nope.
No?
Just okay. Listen to me on this podcast and no other podcast ever again.
PDSMIOS. That one.
Yep.
Is, I guess, still on hiatus.
Oh, sure. If you want to call it a hiatus, I call it a burning to the ground.
Okay. Well, you can listen to my episodes on it.
Only listen to Spencer's episodes. All other episodes have been erased.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.